Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
This is another podcast of Worldwide Wave, the international LGBT news and current affairs show, every week on Australia's first LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the Worldwide Wave.
This is a Worldwide Wave, Joy's international news and current affairs show for and by the LGBTI community. Taking you around the globe, one queer story at a time. I'm Matt, and like many shows across Joy, we are broadcasting far from our usual studio home. But world current affairs go on during COVID, and so must the Worldwide Wave team. So welcome, Paul.
Good evening.
And hello, Stefan.
Hello. The Syrian Arab Republic has long been a powder keg of instability in the Middle East. The most recent conflict has overwhelmed the country since 2011. Under cover of conflicts, perpetrators of sexual violence go unnoticed and unprosecuted. While women and girls are disproportionately targeted for sexual violence during conflicts, men and boys are hidden victims.
One thing that is known is that for their victims, there is no escape. With perpetrators from both the government and armed extremist groups like ISIS, victims simply have nowhere to turn for help. Human Rights Watch is shining a light on these crimes in the report titled, "They Treated Us in Monstrous Ways. Sexual violence against men, boys and transgender women in the Syrian conflict." Researcher and report author Pinar Erdem from Human Rights Watch joins us to discuss the findings.
And a warning, tonight's show deals with some difficult topics and horrific stories of abuse. We do believe it is important for the stories of these brave victims to be told, but we also understand if you do not wish to join us tonight on the show. Here's a taste of what's coming up tonight.
We know that men and boys, they fear to be stigmatized. You know, they fear to be rejected by their families and the community because of the, you know, the stigma and shame around sexual violence.
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like Worldwide Wave on Facebook now.
We have all seen or heard of trouble in Syria. For nearly 10 years, it has been consumed in conflict and subject to international sanction due to terrorism. But the violence is not limited just to warring factions. Using the cover of conflict, violent acts are regularly perpetrated against civilians. And if you don't quite fit in, like you are not a stereotypically masculine man or boy, or you are transgender, then you are at even greater risk. But few of these stories ever get out. It's not possible to get these stories from victims inside Syria. Human Rights Watch conducted interviews with refugees that had escaped to the relative safety of Lebanon. But even then, many feared repercussions and told their stories under condition of anonymity. The end result is a report titled, "They Treated Us in Monstrous Ways, Sexual Violence Against Men, Boys and Transgender Women in the Syrian Conflict." We asked report author Pinar Erdem from Human Rights Watch why they felt the need to particularly focus on this type of violence.
Stefan, we knew that conflict-related sexual violence against men and boys was rife in Syria and around the world. However, it's underreported. And we, as HRW, we wanted to focus on this issue to basically shed a light and add more information to the already existing research. and so that survivors, all survivors of sexual violence, both men and women, can receive adequate care and support.
Why is it underreported, Pinar? Is it because it's not hard to report, or people just aren't willing to come forward?
Well, that's a great question, Matt. So, you know, talking about sexual violence, it's difficult for everyone, right? It's difficult for all survivors. However, we know that men and boys, they fear to be stigmatized. You know, they fear to be rejected by their families and the community because of the, you know, the stigma and shame around sexual violence against men and boys, and therefore they refrain from reporting, and the stigma around male invulnerability, basically. So because of the stigma and because of the fear and shame, they are reluctant to come forward. For example, with this research, we were able to interview 4 heterosexual survivors, right? Because even anonymously, they were reluctant to speak to us about this issue.
So why is this type of violence happening, or why did you come across it in Syria particularly?
Well, so in Syria, since the beginning of March 2011, since the beginning of the Syrian conflict, men and boys and women, they are subjected to sexual violence. And the use of sexual violence, especially in detention centers, is widespread in Syria. And it's systematic. HRW, they had already found, we already found that the use of torture is widespread in Syria. And sexual violence is part of the tools they use to torture people, basically. So that's why we focused on Syria.
And you conducted interviews with various men and also transgender women. I mean, this is an incredibly personal thing, and you said they were reluctant coming forward. What were the stories? What are some of the stories that really stuck with you?
There are many, I must say, Matt, because the stories that I heard, all of them were gruesome. But one of them is the story of Yusuf. Yusuf, he's a 28-year-old gay man, and he was detained for being in anti-government protests in around 2012. So he was detained basically due to the conflict, and he was already being, you know, tortured during interrogations. And then his phone was checked by the intelligence services, the intelligence security forces, and his sexual orientation was revealed through checking his phone. And Yusuf told me that the violence he was being subjected to was multiplied by 10. Once they realized that he was gay. And he said that they were happily doing this. He said that they asked me while they were raping me, "You like this, right? You're enjoying this, aren't you?" So this really stayed with me, Matt, I must say. And Yusuf, he's currently in another country, right? He's in a third country right now. He's not even in Lebanon. He's one of the 2 people I spoke to who were able to be sent to another country, replaced in another country. And still, it's 10 years almost now that he has been through this. And he says that the trauma is still with him. He says that he wakes up at nights. He said that he still looks back when he walks around in the streets. So survivors of sexual violence, Matt, they suffer from serious physical and psychological trauma. And Yusuf was one of them. Another one was a trans woman. She was detained in a central prison when she was a child, when she was above 18, so she was a child, right? And she was subjected to gang rape just because of her sexual orientation, just because of her gender identity, just because she was trans, she was subjected to sexual violence. So, and another one, I must say, and she, well, The reason why I mentioned them is another trans woman, she was sexually harassed by security forces in Syria, and she was only 22 years old when we were talking with each other. And she literally told me with every single detail how she planned to commit suicide, Matt. So that really stuck with me. Survivors of sexual violence, as I said, they suffered from serious psychological trauma, and suicidal ideation is one of them. All of this stuck with me. All of this stuck with me, and I thought of this every single day after the interviews that I conducted almost a year ago right now. So yeah, I can say that a glimpse of what basically happened and what I heard from survivors.
That was Pinar Erdem from Human Rights Watch with us on Joy 94.9. And don't forget, if you feel affected by any of the stories tonight, there is support available. Please go to joy.org.au/support, where you'll find useful context.
It's sometimes very difficult to talk about these issues. As we said, we do think it's important that a light is shone on these horrendous crimes. But I guess one of the challenges that Human Rights Watch has come across is trying to get people to speak up in the first place.
Well, it's almost a double stigma, isn't it? That there's the stigma of being LGBTI, or even just being considered to be LGBTI, and then the stigma of then having suffered these violent sexual acts as well.
I think it's important to bring this report to people, because you know, we talk about Syria a lot in the sense of ISIS and all the terrorist attacks and things, but there's much more going on there, and a lot of in conflicts there is a lot of violence, and obviously this is systematic violence against women, but also men that appear not to be as men worthy as the others, being used, you know, in this way, and tortured and all sort of things. So,
and just within the family, as Paul was saying, the double stigma, that the family shame, if it's not shame about your sexuality, then it's shame that you have been violated, that you have, you know, gone through this experience. So rather than support, there's a, you know, it's an added pain for the victims.
But it's also even just your perceived sexuality or gender. Some of the people that are suffering, then they're not necessarily LGBTI. They're just not masculine enough, as you said, to actually, I guess, they must assume that they're not masculine enough to put up a fight.
And that is then magnified when you're in a detention centre. So, Pinar was talking there about systematic violence within detention centres. So, sometimes using this sort of sexual violence as a torture method, but also sometimes just for entertainment.
I would have thought this kind of thing would be outlawed, though. There's no laws, so it doesn't really apply. But I would have thought something like the UN would have actually clamped down on something like this, using sexual violence as a torture.
Well, I think these things are war crimes. The conflict in Syria has been going on for so long, and it's a lot of it is still hidden, and a lot of it is difficult to... I think that's why this report is really important, because it's very difficult to uncover what goes on in conflict zones, and this is really shining a light on that, and trying to, I mean, hopefully to get us to react and government agencies as well.
And not just finding out things within conflict zones, but within a hub of a detention centre where, you know, it would be very hard for anything to get out. You know, even Yusuf's story, he said that the violence increased tenfold when they found out he was gay. So,
and he wasn't originally arrested for that. He was, and then that came to light and it became worse. So he used that as another weapon.
Very challenging indeed. And coming up, we find out why LGBT people are more likely to be victims in these conflict situations. You're on Worldwide Wave.
Marhaba, this is Khaled Abdul Hadi, founder of the first LGBT magazine in Jordan and one of the first in the MENA region, speaking from Jordan on the Worldwide Wave.
Listen to Joy anywhere. Joy 94.9 on your radio, at joy.org.au, on the Joy 94.9 app, iHeartRadio, or tunein.com. No matter where you are, you can always tune in to Joy.
Even though we're currently broadcasting from outside of the studios, you can still message us by Facebook, Worldwide Wave or W3 Joy.
Now, we had a message that we shared within the week because our friends at ILGA World, the International Lesbian, Gay, Trans organisation, which advocates for LGBT rights at the international, the UN level, they celebrated 42 years of their good work. So a big thank you from everyone here in Australia.
Tonight, we are shining a light on the hidden crimes against LGBT people in the Syrian conflict. A report by Human Rights Watch shows that men, boys and transgender people, regardless of their sexual orientation or gender identity, are particularly vulnerable to sexual violence. The report author Pinar Erdem from Human Rights Watch in the Middle East explains why LGBT people are more likely to be victims of this kind of sexual violence in conflict situations.
Well, that's a good question. So let me come back. We knew that sexual violence, right, against men and boys, regardless of their sexual orientation and gender identity, was rife in Syria. However, the more we spoke to survivors, we came to realize that the violence they were subjected to increased once their sexual orientation, their actual or perceived sexual orientation and gender identity was revealed. And they used the word soft-looking. This was a term used by the survivors to explain that they were perceived as effeminate by the perpetrators, meaning they did not conform to the expected masculine traits. They did not conform to the masculine traits, and they were obviously, especially apart from the conflict, you know, LGBT people, they are already stigmatized and ostracized by their families and the community. So with the conflict, this exacerbates, basically, the already existing vulnerability of gay men, bi men, trans women, and non-binary people. It exacerbated with the conflict, the already existing homophobia, the already existing transphobia, and the stigma around sexuality. It basically exacerbated with the conflict. The lack of family support increases the vulnerability of survivors, of gay survivors, of trans survivors. Families, they should accept their children with their sexual orientations and gender identity and support them and not ostracize them and not stigmatize them and basically not contribute to the already vulnerability they have, because that's one of the things that happened in Syria. And survivors I spoke to, some of them believe that their families handed them to the security forces because of their sexual orientation. Some of them told me that their names were given to the checkpoints so that they could be caught by the security forces. Another survivor I spoke to, he told me that his mother sent him a text saying that, "May God break your heart as you broke mine, you effeminate, you faggot. You should leave this country in 2 weeks or I will kill you myself."
Now, you investigated violence against men and boys, but you also decided to include trans women in your the investigation. Why is that, and what is happening to trans women specifically in Syria?
So the reason why we included trans women is that the more we spoke to survivors, we realized that trans women, they were not able to present themselves as women safely in Syria because of the fear, you know, of stigmatization, of, you know, the fear of being rejected by their families and the community and being subjected to different kinds of violence. So they said that they were not able to present as women and they dressed as men. But again, this time, as I said just a few minutes ago, they were perceived as soft men. They were perceived as gay men by the perpetrators. So again, they were not able to get away from the violence. Again, they were subjected to violence by the perpetrators. And basically, trans women, like gay men, they were sexually harassed at checkpoints for being soft-looking. They were raped and subject to gentle violence, a threat of rape, forced nudity, sexual harassment at Syrian detention centers and central prisons and military prisons. And also some of the survivors I spoke to, trans women, they were serving in the army. They were serving in the military, obviously due to the conflict, due to the existing conflict. And they said that because of their gender identity, they were subjected to rape and other forms of sexual violence within the ranks of the Syrian army. So most of the survivors I spoke to also fled Syria just because of this, just because of the sexual violence they were subjected to within the army in Syria.
Is it the conflict that sort of gives this cover? I mean, are the issues of sexual violence for Syrian refugees limited to Syria, or is it also seen in sort of other countries where people are awaiting, you know, to exit permanent visas?
It's both, actually, Matt. That's a great question. The conflict is one of the reasons how there is no, basically, no accountability, right, because of conflict. So the use of sexual violence is rife during conflict since there is no accountability. But at the same time, it's kind of a general problem with refugees too, because people who flee from Syria to Lebanon, they were also subjected to sexual violence while they were fleeing to Lebanon as well, or to other countries like Turkey. So it's both related to the conflict, because it's also post-conflict, what you're asking, basically, Matt.
And Pina, what are the long-term impacts of this violence?
Well, there are many, unfortunately, survivors of sexual violence. People we spoke to, they mentioned, they described serious emotional and psychological symptoms, such as a consistent, continuing depression, post-traumatic stress, sexual trauma, loss of hope, paranoid thoughts, suicidal ideation, and which is continuing for years and years and years, basically, since they are not able to receive adequate care and support. And they also describe severe physical pain. They describe severe pain in their rectum and genitals. They described rectal bleeding, muscle pain, and obviously sexually transmitted diseases, including HIV. For example, Yusuf, when we were conducting the interview years after the violence happened, and although he went through a lot of surgeries, by the way, he told me, still I have pain when I'm sitting. So the physical pain and the psychological pain, it doesn't go away unless survivors are able to receive adequate support and care. That's really crucial. That's why we wanted to focus on the impact of the violence. That's why we also wanted to focus on the services, but not only the violence which is happening and which happened maybe years ago. So it's not only important to stop the violence, it's important to address the effects of the violence so that survivors can live fully and continue their lives fully, despite what they have been through.
From Human Rights Watch, that's Pinar Erdem with us on Joy 94.9. And of course, if tonight's story has affected you in any way, the Joy website, joy.org.au/support, has heaps of support organisations here within Australia who are there ready to help. Unfortunately, not so much help within Syria, and even a lack of support within your family. So, you know, families are the first line of support that you need, but whether it's to do with your sexual orientation or the violence that you've been put through, it just doesn't seem to be there.
And from what Pina was saying, they can actually be the source of the violence, or because they basically dob people in, which is unbelievable if you know what's actually happening. I'm sure they must know what's happening.
It's something, a bit of a warped sense of shame if your son or you know daughter has been subjected to sexual violence and you consider that shame on the family. I find that really hard to understand.
Well, it's almost a the person is better off dead as far as the family is concerned.
Certainly not a place I would like to live. Trans women, they're not able to present as women, so they sort of fall into this category of, you know, being gay or soft.
Yeah, and then are subjected to the same abuse that the men and the boys. I think the lack of family support is probably something that has to do, not just the perception, but, you know, if you don't have the support to actually, you know, dress as a woman, it's really hard.
So then there was the, carrying on from what Pino was saying about if they were serving in the army, in armed forces, they were subject to this violence anyway. So these people weren't even in detention centres. They're just trying to serve in the armed forces and they were being violated.
And again, they had nowhere to go. Coming up on Joy 94.9, find out how you and the broader international community can help. This is Worldwide Wave.
Hi, everyone. This is Imani da Silva, a transgender activist from Angola on the Worldwide Wave.
It's the show that takes you around the globe, one queer story at a time, Worldwide Wave. And tonight we are taking you to Syria. And a special hello to everyone listening to us on podcast. You can subscribe to receive our podcasts automatically either at joy.org.au/worldwidewave or via iTunes, Spotify, or whatever your favourite podcast platform is. And please don't forget to leave us a review.
Tonight we bring you the stories of LGBT survivors of sexual violence in a Syrian conflict. Penn stays with the victims long after the initial incident, with psychological trauma and ongoing physical pain, as well as loss of hope. Report author Pina Erdem from Human Rights Watch tells us that there is some hope. We ask Pina how the international community and you as an individual can help.
Pina, the international community is pumping money and support into Syria to help rebuild it. Should the international community be doing more to influence and stop this kind of behaviour?
Yes, yes.
What definitely should they be doing?
So basically, Matt, obviously when... I'm going to speak both general and also with respect to Lebanon. So generally, this violence, the conflict-related sexual violence, is happening everywhere around the world. And therefore, the international donors, they have to fund, they have to provide funding for medical services and psychological services and social programs around the world where these survivors are located. In terms of Lebanon specifically, obviously, currently Lebanon is going through one of their unprecedented economic crises, political crises. And obviously, unfortunately, with the last explosion that happened in Lebanon, the humanitarian sector, they are currently in a really, really harsh, really bad situation. So international donors must step up. They have to step up and they must provide, as I said, funding to medical and psychological care and social programs in Lebanon for male survivors and trans survivors. And this is really crucial. They should do this without diverting any funding from the already scarce funding that is given to women and girls. That's crucial. When we speak about survivors, in my opinion, the arguments should not go to the scarcity of funding. The arguments should not create a... should not basically choose between one or other, so one to the other, basically. All survivors, all of them, men and women, they should receive adequate care. And with this funding, obviously, service providers, humanitarian programs, they should provide tailored services. Because in Lebanon, I'd like to mention quickly, they received really limited care. They received limited and inadequate services due to the lack of funding. And they said that existing services are not comprehensive in Lebanon. They said that the staff resources and the capacity are very limited to meet the needs of male survivors and trans survivors. Due to the lack of funding, the service providers told me that they were not trained. So they told me that we don't know what to do when we come across a male survivor, a trans survivor of sexual violence. We just don't know what to do. And this contributes to the re-traumatization of survivors. So this is a serious issue. And therefore, international donors should step up and do something about this.
All those things, though, are support after the fact. Can there be anything done to try and stop this sort of torture, this sort of pain from happening in the first place, from happening in Syria?
Accountability, Matt. So international donors, they should also support efforts to ensure that accountability for the use of sexual violence in Syria, regardless of gender and regardless of sexual orientation. So we're talking about a conflict situation currently. So here, the things that could be done is basically about the accountability, which is, again, I know about the aftermath of the issue. But since we're talking about conflict, it's really hard to say what could be done currently or before. That's a totally different topic that we can talk about for maybe hours.
And Pinar, you've issued some recommendations for governments as well and other agencies, but what can we do to help at an individual level?
In the individual level, well, first of all, listening to this conversation is one of them, basically. People have to know about what's going on, and people should change the way they think about male vulnerability. People should try to learn and change how they think about LGBT people, about sexual orientation and gender identity, about the vulnerabilities. So in the individual level, it's basically learning and listening, and changing how you treat people, changing how you treat others. That's what could be done in the individual level. It's so simple. You don't have to be someone who's working in this field. You just have to be a human being to be able to do this. So it shouldn't be that hard, basically. Listening, learning, accepting the fact that maybe you might be wrong and that you might have biases about sexual orientation and gender identity, and changing how you treat others, basically. So it's very clear that in the individual level, there's a lot that we can do to change this without asking anybody else to change. So being part of the change, choosing to being part of the change, is the key, in my opinion.
Everyone has the power to change the world. Pinar Erdem from Human Rights Watch in the Middle East, thank you so much for joining us on World Wide Wave.
Thank you so much for having me and for your interest in the report. Thank you so much.
A very challenging topic and a very difficult report, but as we said, it needs to come out of the darkness. There's lots of support services here in Australia. joy.org.au/support has a list of lots of them who are ready to help. Unfortunately, not as many support services in these countries, certainly nothing at all in Syria, but the challenges of refugees when they escape, you know, they escape the immediate harm from the country that they're in, but, you know, the places that they're going to just don't have the resources, the people or the time to, you know, give them the help that they need.
And if you look at Syrian refugee, the majority of Syrian refugee end up in Lebanon. Lebanon is really, I mean, for LGBT Lebanon, and we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, Lebanon is not the most friendly environment, and also they are going through a hell of a time with the explosion, the recent explosion, but also economic crisis and a lot of things happening, and the health service is not the best. So there is really not a lot that you can draw on to support the survivor of this type of crimes and abuse. So that's really hard.
But the only positive thing, hopefully, is that they are relatively safe.
Yeah, so they're out of, you know, they're safe from harm, but in terms of the support, we probably should be doing more, and the international community should be doing more.
And certainly that's what Human Rights Watch is calling for the funding bodies, whether they're governments who are pouring money into these countries that need help, or not-for-profits who jump in to make sure that they are providing these sorts of services as a part of what they do all the time. And, you know, this is one of the things that Pinar was talking about. It's the long-term effects. It's not just that immediate physical attack. there might be long-term physical needs, and if you're in a place like Lebanon with poor health, then that's hard to get. And that's even before you get into the psychological side.
I mean, the point that Pinar makes about the funding and the strong point she makes about it's not a matter of taking it off women and children support to give it to men and boy support. It's a matter of actually making sure that everyone gets the support that they need after these tragic circumstances.
So, I mean, how can we raise the profile? How can we raise awareness? Because I doubt a lot of people have seen this report, have heard about this thing. It's certainly not been featured so much in the mainstream media. So how can we, you know, it's very difficult if, I mean, we're doing our best to help in terms of featuring it on the show. But how else can we raise awareness?
I think the Syrian conflict isn't getting that much coverage at the moment anyway. It's unfortunately old news.
Between COVID and Trump, it's low on the news value chain. I do think, though, that not-for-profit groups that go into these conflict situations, you know, they're usually the first responders, whether it's, you know, the Red Cross or the like. They have a role because they're international in focus. You can, in setting up for your conflict response, you can include services, you can factor that into the way you plan. So I think they have a very big role to play in this.
I think the one thing that we do have to bear in mind is, I mean, it's not an excuse, but it is a fact of life, that they have limited resources. Even these first responders, these non-for-profit, non-governmental ones, they have limited resources that then they need to pick and choose what they spend it on. It's a sad fact.
So that brings to the next bit, which is if the, you know, the victim can't access services, there's this whole re-traumatisation that goes on, that they, you know, they have to relive experiences. There's no hope to look forward to. It would be such a difficult situation.
And having to live with the actual physical consequences, I mean, that point hadn't actually occurred to me, that I understood that there would be psychological issues going forward because of the trauma they'd been through, but it hadn't occurred to me that they would also still have physical ones.
And certainly from even just the experience and the stories here in Australia from survivors of institutional sexual abuse, it quite often takes somebody a really long time to work through that and be comfortable, mentioning that to people or, you know, beginning a path to rebuild themselves. So it's not a quick process at all.
Well, it's an example that Pinar gave with Yusuf, wasn't that 10 years ago? Was that something like that?
Very challenging. As we said, if you have any feelings that you need to share with somebody, joy.org/support. Has a heap of organisations around Australia, some of which are available 24 hours, to give you the support and help you need.
Hi, I am Tim.
And I'm Ben.
From Hello Melbourne.
And you are listening to the World Wide Wave
on Joy 94.9.
This Joy program has a podcast and you can subscribe to it at joy.org.au.
A huge thank you to Pinar Erdem from Human Rights Watch tonight for bringing us this report. And the report is titled They Treated Us in Monstrous Ways, Sexual Violence Against Men, Boys and Transgender Women in the Syrian Conflict. The report has been authored by Human Rights Watch, and you can donate to support this very important work at www.hrw.org/donate.
Once again, if you've been affected by any of the stories tonight, please reach out and go to joy.org.au/support, where there will be information there of who you can contact. Also, we'd like to thank people that have been in touch with us through Facebook. So there's Stephen, Ginny, Empress Linda, Pamela, William, and a heap lot more have joined or interacted with us on Facebook over the past week. That is W3Joy on Facebook.
Our wonderful behind-the-scenes team, our podcaster Peter and our social media master Dean, thank you so much for your efforts.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from World Wide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. World Wide Wave is the international news and current affairs show on Australia's LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9. You can listen live every Tuesday night from 7pm Eastern Australian Time on 94.9 FM in Melbourne and online at joy.org.au. You'll find all our podcasts at joy.org.au/worldwidewave or follow us on Facebook for the latest international LGBT news. Search W3 Joy on Facebook now.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.